Today's daf in Masechet Yoma, brought to you from Yerushalayim, Ir HaKodesh, is daf Chof Gimel. And the last thing that we had learned yesterday was on daf Chof Gimel, Omed Aleph, and we were speaking about one of the reasons that Shaul wasn't Zeche for his Malchus was the fact that he refused to respond when people were making fun of him. And one of the things that we learned was that Kol Tamid Chacham She'enu Nokim V'Noter K'Nachash is not a Tamid Chacham. And the Gemara wanted to make a distinction between the Isser of Lo Tikom V'Lo Titor, and to say that that is only Nogea Dinei Mamon, but when it comes to other Tzar, such as Tzar Haguf, or the Tzar that someone was Mevazehim, that's not included in the Isser of Lo Tikom and Lo Titor. So that's where we were up to yesterday, and the last two words on the second line, I believe, is where we reached, and asks the Gemara, what about lo tikom v'lo titor? Answers the Gemara, hahu b'momo nudichtiv. That's only a reference to Yisrei Momoi, as it says, ezohi nikima ve'ezohi nitira nikima, amar lo hashileni magalcha, amar lo no way, l'mbachar amar lo hu hashileni kardomcha. So what would be an example, the difference between Nekima and Netira? So Nekama would be, somebody wants to borrow a hatchet, and he refused to give it to him. And the next day, he asks the other guy, actually was the first one was a sickle, he asks the other guy, lend me your hatchet. This time the Derech of the Gemara is to, you know, just keep, obviously no particular meaning to what it is he wanted to borrow. And the guy responds, "Eini mashilcha k'derech sholi shaltani. I'm not going to lend it to you the same way you didn't lend it to me." That is called nekama. Ve'zohi nitira. Amar lo hashileni kardomcha. In the case the guy says, "Let me borrow your hatchet," and he says, "No." The next day the guy says, "Lend me your coat." Amar lo, "Here, you can borrow it. See, eini kamotcha. I'm not like you. Shalohi shaltani. You didn't lend me something when I wanted to do something." So that is considered to be nitira, because you're what we call bearing a grudge, being shomer the grudge, you're keeping it in mind. So apparently only cases that are nogea, these examples, which has to do dafka with momen. But otherwise there wouldn't be considered to be a iser d'oraisa nekima v'netira. That's what we're talking about. Mashenken Rabbi Shimon ben Yod Sadak, he was speaking about a Talmud Chacham that was attacked in other ways. V'tzara de gufa lo? You're telling me that it's not usher to take revenge or to be shomer this grudge just on, let's say, an insult or suffering in the body? V'atanya hane elavim ve'inan ovim. Shomim cherpatan ve'inan meshivim. Osim mi'ahava usmechim b'yisurin. Aleihem akatuv omer v'ohavav ketzet ha'shemesh b'gvurato. So now this braita is saying that somebody who is on a madrega, who was cursed by someone, who was disgraced by someone, nonetheless, the greatest madrega is to be ne'ela ve'inanovim, meaning not to respond. So how can we say that Shaul lost his malchus because he was on a high madrega and he was someone who was eisimiyava and shemir charposam ve'inameshivim? So how does Reb Shimon ben Rabbi Yitzchak claim that a Talmud Chacham is not supposed to act like this? It seems to be the correct way to act. Well, actually, Reb Shimon ben Yod Sadak holds not that he should respond. It's true. He doesn't respond. Shomim cherpasam ve'inam meshivim. But nonetheless, he's nukit le'belibe. He personally doesn't have a response, but he keeps it in his heart so that if somebody else, Rashi learns, if somebody else wants to go and take revenge on his behalf, so, okay, he lets him take revenge, which is not what Shaul did. Shaul stopped people. And he said, no one should suffer today. And it was something that he prevented. Others learn that it even means that he himself, in some small way, he doesn't respond, but in some small way, he keeps the guy in tzaras until he apologizes. Others learn the nukat lebelibe is that he's happy that HaKadosh Baruch Hu should take revenge for him, but not that he lets other humans take revenge. That's not the mashmaut of the sugya before with Shaul. Asks the Gemara, even this is wrong, because to keep it in mind and to have it remain an issue is also wrong, because doesn't Rava say that if somebody is ma'avir al midotav, so he has a right to act mida keneged mida to somebody, but he's ma'avir, the same way that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is ma'avir, we find the same lashon, ma'avir rishon rishon, and he's ma'avir, and he doesn't have tainas, and he forgets about it, doesn't respond even emotionally, so he doesn't have any internal feelings. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is because of that ma'avirin lo akol p'shav, so that means the bezdin shomala, and there's also mida keneged mida. If you are someone where your pursual of midas hadin, which you have a right to pursue for yourself, your ma'aviran, and it's as if it doesn't exist, so the bezdin shomala mida keneged mida, they may have a lot of tainas on you, but they're also ma'avir the same way you are. So that's mashma that in fact you shouldn't even think about it. You shouldn't even feel about it. You shouldn't be happy that somebody else is doing the dirty work of actually taking revenge. So how do you explain this? Here we're saying that Talmud Chochm is not supposed to be that way. Answers the Gemara, Rav is talking about where the person came to ask you mechila. So that is true. The mefaisu leyu mefais. The moment that the person shows that he has charata, then okay, fine, forget about it. That's ma'avir na midota. And that's the complete mechila. Whereas Rabbi Shimon ben Yotzadok was talking about where the person didn't come. So over there, the question is that you're allowed to, or maybe you're mechuyev to, if you're a Talmud Chacham, to keep it in your heart. So there's big questions over here. The Rambam paskins that it depends whether the Talmud Chacham was insulted publicly or whether it was just in private. If it's insulted publicly, so then it becomes a bizoyan hatera. He learns that that's what it's referring to. So you have to be like a snake because of the fact that if not, so then it teaches people to be mezalzel in the Torah. Okay, others learn that there's a nafkamina between mile shemayim, that if this has to do with something that is the way that you're trying to teach what it is that is nageya, say you're trying to get people to give halacha, or you're putting forth, to give tzedakah, or you're putting forth a halacha, and people are mevaze the way that you maybe were machmer on them or mekel on whatever it is. They're mevaze. That's mile shemaya. Mile shemaya, you're mechuyev to be neikim and neiter kenachash. So there's big machlokas. And as the Chafetz Chaim says, in all of these issues, it's a suffix d'oraisa l'chumra. So better not take a chance and be machmer unless everybody is masking that this is something that you're supposed to be upset about. There's a beautiful, famous mimer by the Baal Shem Tov. That why does it say no kema no terke nochash? Because, as it says in the Pasuk, anachash afar lachmo. And the Chazal Dorish, that obviously doesn't eat dirt. It means that everything that he eats has no taste to him. It only tastes like dirt. So as Baal Shem Tov says, that's the issue over here. Usually we say revenge is sweet, right? But somebody who's being neikem v'neiter because he's mechuyev to, he doesn't taste anything personal in it. So just like a nachash doesn't taste when something is sweet, he doesn't taste revenge is sweet. He just does what he has to. It's very, very sweet itself, right? Okay, anyway, so getting back now to this sugya. Now there's, as I mentioned to you earlier, there's major machlokas in Rishonim, apparently even in the correct Yersoot over here, and in the question of halacha lemaisa, how do we understand the sugya? So according to the Rambam, we actually will count the number of fingers that you stuck out, and that was one of the ways that we understood why you're not being over on being Meines Yisrael, because in this count, you have no idea how many people you actually counted. You didn't count people. You counted fingers. But according to Rashi, he learns that we only ever count one finger, which is the mashmos of the gears that we have over here. In which case, we had the problem of, okay, so if that's the case, why aren't you being over on minyan? We spoke about this yesterday, the various shitas, about whether it's mutter to count with fingers or whether we're putting out, you know, a baguette or something like that, and whether there's a difference, whether it's a sort of mitzvah, and whether it's a question over here of whether you're Tzvadai account or maybe somebody won't put out his fingers, various approaches among the poskim in all of this, like counting people for a minyan. Anyway, so the pashas of the Mishnah is It says they can put out either one or two fingers. Now, if you're telling me you could put out two fingers, so then obviously that means that we don't really mind a situation where, and people might count you as two, right? So, I mean, obviously you could put out one finger if that's the case. So why do you have to tell me you could put out one finger if you're telling me you could put out two fingers? If Ashta Shtayimotziin, so then obviously Achas Biboy, Omrev Chista, well, no. Normally speaking, we actually want people to be makpid, to only put out one finger. So Lokasha, when we say that you could put out two fingers, even though that appears that it may give you an opportunity to manipulate the count, because as you have a chance, maybe there's 60 kanim and they're counting around, and now you quickly analyze how it's going to come out on the third time around, so you stick out an extra finger nobody noticed, and then you influence the count that it should end on you the next time around. So even so, apparently, we don't care. So if that's the case, that would be the way the Rambam learns. Remember, according to Rashi, we only count one. So then the point is that Mipnei Haramaim, that he may end up causing him to count two. In any way, obviously, he could put out one. So what do we have to say? Achas or shtayim. Therefore, says Rav Chista, the point is that we prefer that you put out only one. We don't allow stam a guy to put out two. But in the case would be different if he's a healthy kohen. So kan b'bari, and he can control the fingers that he's putting out. And kan b'chola, a kohen who's not well, or he's old, and he's too weak to be able to properly only stick out one finger without another finger coming out with it, he's allowed to put out two. And that's the way it says it in the Braisa Beferish, Ratanya. Achat motziin, shtayim ein motziin. Bamed dvorim amurim. When do we say you're not allowed to put out two? That's tafka bevari. Avu b'chole. If the kohen is ill, so then afilu shtayim motziin. And for that matter, if somebody is sitting yechidim, so he's not sitting together with the other kohenim, he's on the side. So if he's on the side, he's practicing social distancing. So over there, if he puts out two, there's no way that we're going to count him as two. So all of this is part of Rashi's approach, this girsa. And therefore, there he can even be motzi shtayim. But when we count him, ein monin ala achas, any kohen that does have the right of putting out two fingers will only count him as one finger. Wait, is that true? Ein monin lo ela achat. But what about the braita that says, ein motziin lo shalish velo guda? You can't stick out a middle finger, and you can't stick out a thumb. Why is this? Mipnei haramaim, because these are people that may end up figuring out where the count is going to end. So because you can stretch those fingers very far apart, you can have your thumb on one end and your finger all the way on another end, and the kohen who's quickly counting all of these people may not notice that it belongs to a single hand and he's just looking at fingers. So you may influence the count that it should end up on you. But lemaisa, if you do put out a shalish, which is a middle finger, then we will count that for him. But if you put out a thumb, then we won't count it for him. Not only that, but he's going to get hit from the memuna bipakia, which we'll talk about in a minute when we say pakia. So it's mashma, we do count that finger. No. When it says we count, it means we count him, meaning as one. And that's the chiddush. You might think if he's trying to cheat, so then we actually don't count him at all. Komashmalan, that no, we'll still count him as one, but it doesn't mean that we'll count that extra finger. When you say that he gets hit with the pakia, what exactly is a pakia? Omar Rav, a pakia is a madra. And what is a madra exactly? A madra is a matrika datai. That's the whip that they use on their cattle, which is psik resha. So it has a top that is cut. Well, how do you say that in English? Those kind of whips that are have multiple ends, they're very painful, they hit you like all over. I remember there was a word for that. I thought it was bullwhip, but I looked it up. Cat of nine tails, maybe. Yeah, our captain should know about cat of nine tails, of course. I should have realized that's the guy to ask. I can't hear you either. I hope it's not, I hope that you can hear me because I'm not picking up the sound stick very well. Okay.
There was something muffled that didn't come through.
Oh, okay. All right. So the captain reminds us it's a cat of nine tails. Okay. So, by the way, that's a modern term that he's hit with the pakia. That's why we call the party whip a whip. That's the guy that's supposed to be going around and making sure that people show up and so on. So it's still left over from this time, this Gemara, is that the Pekia is the guy who's going to be in charge of getting people off of their chair and into the vote and so on and so forth. That's called a whip, Al Shema Pekia. It's amazing how these words, and like they sound weird to us in the Gemara, and then you realize, oh my gosh, they're in my morning newspaper. Omer Abaye. I used to think, Mireish Avamin, I used to think that in the Mishnah that we just had in Shkolim, where it says Ben Bivai is Mumuna ala Pekia, so this is that Bibi, he's in charge of the whip. I used to think that that meant not Pekia as a whip. I used to think that it meant the Petilta, that he was in charge of making the wicks for the Menorah and for the big Menorahs that they used in the Simchas Beis HaShoeva, because the lotion of the Mafki'in would be to tear off parts. And it says this, it says in the Mishnah that we have in Sukkah, when we're talking about making those thick wicks for the Simchas Beis HaShoeva, so it says they used to use the worn out Bigdei Kohuna, the Michnasayim, and the Ma'avnet of the Kohanim, and they would tear them into thick threads, that's what they used to light the ideas. It's related, of course, to all of the other issues of the bittul of the Yetzer Hara, which is part of the Simchas Beis HaShoeva, and that's why it was Davka for Michnasay, to be Mechaseb Sar Erva and Mehemneim, which is supposed to be the Mechalik between Besar Erva and Liboy Reyes Erva. So they Bedavka used those things to make the light for the Simchas Beis HaShoeva. And I thought that that's what Pekia meant, because it used the Lashon Mafki'in. But now I heard this Braita, which says that it means a whip. Now I understand that there is a Memuna al HaPekia, and that was Ben Bivai. And so it's actually a reference to a whip. Now I understood that. Amina, now I said to myself, you know what? That's probably what it means. So my Pekia, Nagda, it's a way of getting people to the vote. Okay, the next part in the Mishnah continues like this. That Maaseh Shayu Shneihem Shavim V'Ratzim V'Olim B'Kevesh, and one of them pushed the other, and he fell off, and he broke his leg, and so they realized that it was a sakana. Now, this is really strange, because we have a famous brisa with a famous maaseh before the Churban that occurred in the days of Reb Tzadok, and it says over there, Maaseh B'Shnei Kohanim Shayu Shneihem Ratzim V'Olim B'Kevesh. There was a maaseh where these Kohanim were doing the race thing that we had originally spoke about, and so they were neck to neck, and one of them was gaining on the other guy. He takes out a knife and he throws it right into the other guy's heart and kills him. So Omad Rabbi Tzadok Amalota Olam Rabbi Tzadok. Of course, he was the one that was the most sensitive, and he was being misana and a churban that was approaching, and he stood up on the stairways of the Olam so everybody could see him. And he shouts, Achenu Beis Yisrael Shimu. It says in the Torah, Ki yimatzei chalal ba'adama ve'yatzu zekeinecha v'shoftecha. You're supposed to go out even for someone who was just murdered somewhere on the road, and you have to come out and bring the Sanhedrin, and everybody goes and they bring the Egla Rufa. So where do you think, who should be chayav an Egla Rufa? Should we bring the Egla Rufa for a kapora for the Beis HaMikdash? Should it be on Yerushalayim, or should it be on the Azorais with the Kohanim are? Go, kola am b'vchiyah. Everybody burst out crying. This is a terrible, such an unbelievable disaster. What an unbelievably ironic and hopeless contrast to the idea of Egla Rufa, that the Beis Din was supposed to go out from here to like the boondocks where such things could happen, and here such a thing happens in the Beis HaMikdash. It's horrifying. Meanwhile, the father of this Kohen that was killed, Ba Aviv Shal Tinok, Umitzao Kishu Mefarper, referred to him as a Tinok because he was a young Kohen, and he finds that he's still alive, and he's like in and he's flipping, you know, Mefarper is like he's writhing on the floor, and he says to them, well, Reb Tzadok made you feel that there's no kapora, because obviously we can't bring an egla rufa, my son should be your kapora. Harehu kaparatchem. V'adayin benim if our parent, by the way, he's still alive, and therefore the sakin that is in his body did not become tame, because he didn't die yet. And what does this teach you? It teaches you that in the eyes of these people, they were more worried about the knife being tame than they were about shvichas dami. It's an incredible thing to say. This man's son is dying, and he says, but don't worry, the knife isn't tame, because he didn't die yet. What in the world? And that shows you what we're talking about over here, that that was more chashiv to them than the issue of the actual shvichas dami. And indeed, that was the pasuk that we brought before when we spoke about shvichas dami. We find the same idea about Menashe. V'gam dam naki shafach Menashe arbe ma'od ad asher mileit Yerushalayim pelapet, that this was something that had happened before in the Beis HaMikdash HaRishon. And apparently because of that, people became very insensitive to Shvichas Dami, which we'll see. The Gemara is going to ask. Now, I don't understand how it is that if a murder took place, that we should focus in the Mishnah on a broken leg taking place. I mean, which Maisa happened first over here? I mean, if this event of the Shvichas Damim happened before we were Metakeim, the pious, so then does that make sense? I mean, somebody was actually murdered, and that we did not make a pious for. So lo takinu pious. And then we see somebody gets his leg broken. Oh my gosh, it's going to be a sakana. So then we are Metakeim a pious. Ella, what are you going to tell me? That no, actually the first event was the broken leg, and that's when we were Metakeim the pious. But if that's when we were Takin the pious, then how did this happen? So given the Takinu pious, how was there a race? There were no races after the pious was Metukan. So what am I missing over here? So Arba Amot Mayavidatayu. There was no such event. Ella, we have no choice but to say that in reality, Shvichas Damim was the first Maisa. But that is so extreme that they thought it was insane. I mean, there's always crazy people. Crazy people do crazy things, say crazy things, act crazy things. So intelligent people, when they see crazy people, they say, okay, you know, there's always going to be crazy. These are outlier events by definition. So we're going to make a takana for an outlier event. We know that in general, Chazal are only metaking something which is something that is standard, something that you have to be concerned is normal. When you see somebody who's obviously not normal, or when an event is like so much off of the charts, so off of the charts means that it's lo shchicha. If it's lo shchicha, I'm not going to be making gzera for it. So the truth is that this event of the murder happened first, and they thought that it was, okay, it's not groi bi'almo, it's just this random outlying event. Kivan dechazida filo memela atuli de sakana. But then they saw that just in the normal course of events, people were also coming to, I mean, listen, when you're racing, competitive racing, and people bump into each other or they pretend to bump it, I mean, that's pretty standard. So somebody can fall and break a leg. So that they did not feel was something that was an outlying event. And because of that, takin rabban apaisa, that was already considered to be shchicha. But what does Rabbi Tzadik mean when he gets up there in the Ma'alot Olam and he says, Achinu beis Yisroel shimu, harei omer ki imatzei chalal badama, nana milavi, ala ir v'ala zara. It doesn't make any sense. Yerushalayim is not chayef to bring an egla rufa, is it? V'Yerushalayim bati tuye egla rufa. Didn't we have in the Braisa that asara dvarim, Nemra b'Yerushalayim, and one of the things that was Nemar b'Yerushalayim was that Eina Mevia Egla Rufa, because it says over there that it's Dafka, the Chiyav of Egla Rufa, it says specifically in the Pasek, Ki Matzei Chalal Ba'adamar Shehashem Lokecha Noten Lecha L'Rishta, and if we hold that Yerushalayim was not Nischalka L'Shvatim, so then there was no L'Rishta on Yerushalayim, in which case, how would we be Mechayev Yerushalayim in a Negla Rufa? Something is really weird. Besides, I mean, it's crazy. An Negla Rufa you only bring when you have no idea who the murderer was. I mean, over here, everybody was watching the murder. What's Rabbi Tzadik talking about? Yeah, so obviously, people say things like this as metaphorically. I mean, it was just there that they should understand how ironic and crazy this is. Obviously, he didn't mean seriously, who are we going to bring an egg on roof? I mean, that's a joke. But people immediately understood what it was he was referring to, and it moved them very deeply. So he said it in this way, which is fine, because everybody understood that it was meant this way. And as Tosis points out, I mean, look, we could have said initially, when you say Yerushalayim doesn't bring an Egla Rufa, that's only going according to the Mandi Omar, that an Yerushalayim was on Nischak L'Shvatim. But we saw Machlokas earlier about whether Yerushalayim was Nischak L'Shvatim. So why didn't we say that? So Tosis says, because we're about to pull apart the whole thing and show it's ridiculous. So we're going to start seriously considering over here whether it's dependent on the Machlokas. Okay. L'chaim, l'chaim, Rabbanea, l'chaim, l'chaim. Let's see you take a drink. Excellent, excellent, wonderful. So it was only k'dei l'harbot b'b'chiyah. It was only to get people to respond. Anyway, now we have a very profound question. And this is a question which is so nogea, our contemporary situation. Here it says, Ba'aviv shel tinok, mitzao shu mifarper, amar areyu kaparatchem, vadain b'ni kayam, lelametcha shekosh aleim tarat kelim yoter bishvichu tamim. So what does this teach you? It teaches you that these people cared more about the knife than they did about the murder. So how does that happen? Iboilu. Is that because shvichus damim in their eyes had become cheap, or... And that this question of how chomor Tyrus Kalim was always chomor. That stayed the same. And then murder went down in the order, the hierarchy of what is important. It moved down to become less than Tyrus Kalim. Or is it the other way around? Is that, no, they were just as horrified at Shvichas Damim as you and I are. It was inconceivable that somebody should be murdered, except that Tyrus Kalim was insanely more important to them. We don't even have a concept of that, that people should view Tyrus Kalim as being so chomor. Now, notice that this is exactly what we suffer from. I mean, everybody will tell you, you know, okay, I mean, so people are very makpid on such and such a level of kashrus, but they don't seem to be makpid on Lashon Hara. So what does that show? It's the same issue. Maybe they are very makpid on Lashon Hara. They're just more makpid on a better hechsher. So which way is it? I mean, whenever you have a disruption in terms of what people think is important and what people think is less important, there's two ways of understanding that disruption and that perversion. So the first of all, the amazing implication of the Gemara is that it really doesn't matter. In other words, we were looking at this in terms of trying to understand what was going on. But where it came from is not going to change the fact that lelametcha shekashelahem, that's never going to be a mila shekashelahem. Because the nature of values is by definition, I'll show you why it's definition. The nature of values is always that it's in a hierarchy of values. And if it's a hierarchy of values, putting something that is not meant to be ahead of something else is a perversion of the system of values. And that's why in English we always refer to a system of values, because people can always bring a value. Oh my God, look at this, look at this. While they're talking about look at this, look at this, they are themselves doing things that are infinitely worse by speaking Lashon Hara about look at this. And nonetheless, we take them seriously. And that's all part of Western culture, is that things are not seen as a system of values at all. In Lashon HaKodesh, it's much more profound than that. The word for values is the word for system. Erechin means a system, right? So we can't talk about a system of values. The word for the value is the system. And that means that the hierarchy of values is not an external issue. It is the nature of what you're dealing with. You understand the implications of such a thing when it comes to, okay, so this guy is a no good, but still we have to take what he takes seriously, and yeah, he's right about Black Lives Matter, whatever. The whole thing just turns into a laughable, non-value discussion in which your values are damaged by consideration of things outside of a system of values. And that's why the Gemara wants to say, okay, but there's two ways that these perversions can arise. They can arise from people becoming extremely frum and making more out of something that it, than it's, it should be, which is the issue of Tyrus Kalim now being more chashev than the murder, or they can lose their sensitivity to things. So which way did it happen? Tashma. Since the Brisa says, Mirkanasiv la Talmuda, Vigamnaki, Damnaki Shafach Minashe. Why did the Pasuk appear in the Brisa? So we're talking about the second Beis HaMikdash. We're not talking about the first Beis HaMikdash. So why would we even mention Damnaki Shafach Minashe? Must be because the Tana is coming to teach you that there was a loss of sensitivity to Shvichas Damim and not an increase in sensitivity to Tyrus Kalim. So Shema Mina Shvichas Damim Udezal V'Taharat Kalim is Kidekaima Kaima. Okay, the next thing that we had in the mission, of course, brought us to Trumas Hadeshen. And after that, after the Trumas Hadeshen, and we have a Machlokas Rishonim, there was Hotzas Hadeshen. So according to Rashi and Chumash, Hotzas Hadeshen, according to many Rishonim, Hotzas Hadeshen was only done, which is the Pashtus of the Sugya, was only done when there was an awful lot of Deshen on the Mizbeach. And in fact, sometimes, as the Mishnah reports, sometimes during the Regolim, there was so much there that there was Shalosh Meyazkur, and they would put all of it on the Tapuach, but they left it there. So Rashi says it was only taken out when it just became overwhelming and needed to be removed. The Rambam understands from the Lashon of the Pasuk that Hotza'at HaDeshen is actually done every single day. And it's the next part of Trumat HaDeshen. You do Trumat HaDeshen and you do Hotza'at HaDeshen. And in any event, the question is, how do we exactly understand the psukim of the relationship of a Trumas HaDeshen to Hotza'at HaDeshen? So listen carefully to the psukim, because we're going to be analyzing them now. V'lavasha kohen midobad, u'michdesei bad yobash al besaro, v'heirim et HaDeshen asher tochal ha'esh, v'somo etzel ha'mizbeach. Now this is very strange, because it's talking about wearing only midobad, which is the ketonet, and the michnasayim. What happened to his other clothing? I mean, doesn't he have to be wearing his avnet? Doesn't he have to be wearing his mitznefet? Pasuk leaves it out. Then the very next pasuk says, "Upashat et bigadav, take off those begadim, v'lavash begadim acherim, and put on other begadim. V'otziat hadeshen al michutz lamachaneh el makom tor." So the trumas hadeshen was put directly next to the mizbeach. The haromas hadeshen was taken out of the city and brought to the what's called the Beit HaDeshen. When it says he should take off his clothes and wear other clothes, what does that mean? That he should take off his Bigdei Kohuna and wear Bigdei Chol? I mean, is it true that he was wearing Bigdei Kohuna? It says over here he's only wearing two Begadim, but the Bigdei Kohuna can't just be two Begadim. So the whole Pasuk is very interrelated. The first begadim are related to the second begadim, and we're meant to see them in some kind of contrast, other begadim, whatever that means. And that gives us two psukim that play off of each other. So how do we understand the two psukim? So Tana Rabbana, upashat et begadav elavash begadim acherim votziat hadeshen amichutz lamachaneh, and so on. So what does this mean? I would have thought that it means the same thing that it means on Yom Kippur, where we have basically the same kind of lashon, because we find that over there it also says that the Kohen should take off his begadim and put on begadim. Okay, so maybe that's what it means. The same thing that it basically means on Yom Kippur, where over there it means that he should take off his Bigdei Kodesh when it appears at the end of the Aveda, and he should put on his Bigdei Chol. Maybe that's what it means over here. If you're going to do Hotzas HaDeshen, take off your Bigdei Kohuna. So obviously on Yom Kippur, when it says that he should put on other Begadim, it means other Begadim that are Bigdei Lavan, or other Begadim that are Bigdei Zahav. It can't mean that here, because there aren't two options of different type of Bigdei Kohuna that can be worn for normal Aveda on a normal day by a normal Kohen. So it's got to mean over here, if it's going to be similar to Yom Kippur, it's got to mean other Begadim that are not the same, meaning they would have to be Bigdei Chol. What else could it mean? So that would tell me that he should not be wearing Bigdei Kohuna. Talmud Lomar, so I would have thought that's what it meant, Talmud Lomar, Upashat et bigadav vilavash et bigadim echirim. Now tell me why it has to take. He has to take off his clothes. How can he put on other clothes if he doesn't take off his first clothes? So what that's coming to do, therefore, is that the Pusik wants me to recognize that the two psukim are actually playing off of each other, and that you need to understand that the begadim acherim are being compared to his original begadim. So just like his begadim initially, we're referring to the Michmas Sebat and the Mido, and that's Bigdei Kodesh. So Mal Halam Bigdei Kodesh. So then if that's the case, Afkan Bigdei Kodesh. So if he's going to do the Haromas, the Haromas Adeshin, he has to do with Bigdei Kodesh, he's going to have to do Otsas Adeshin, Bigdei Kodesh. So then what is the meaning of Acherim? Acherim must come to tell me that they are Bigdei Kuna, but they are less Choshev than his original Bigdei Kuna. So they should be more worn and cheaper. Chutimehem. Rebbe Eliezer says you're reading a pasuk wrong. Uvilavash begadim, stop. Acherim vahotzi is the way to read the pasuk, which means that other kohanim, which are not kosher for the Aveda, namely their balei mumim, this comes to teach me that a kohen with a balei mum is kosher to do the Otsas Hadeshin. Now, there's a machlokas we've shown him as to whether Rebbe Eliezer only learns this, or he also agrees to the other drush that it has to be Bigadim Achirin. But and that's a question. Does he hold that you need Bigdei Kuhuna, and he's only allowing a Kohen Baal Mum? It's a very strange thing to do something that requires Bigdei Kuhuna. Or as many Rishonim learn, he can't learn that you need Bigdei Kuhuna, because if he learns you need Bigdei Kuhuna, then he would be learning that it has a din of an Aveda. And if it has a din of Aveda, how could it be done by a Kohen Baal Mum? We'll soon see that this is a part of a discussion of Rabbi Yochanan Reish Lakish. So, let's understand the meaning of the original drush. Omamar, Acherim means Pechutim Mehem. And that is very understandable, because that's like another brisa. There's a brisa that was taught by the Tanit Vei Rabbi Shmuel. The Tanit Vei Rabbi Shmuel, we learn from here that it's derech eretz. Begadim should be shelbem kedera l'rabo. Let's say somebody was working in the kitchen, and he prepares over there a beautiful cholent for his Rebbe. So he should not walk out with those dirty clothing that he wears in the kitchen, and now come out to pour a beautiful cup of wine. He should dress himself up with white gloves and, you know, have a little towel over his arm. And you don't look the same when you're in the kitchen as you do when you're actually doing the service. So the same thing is true over here. If you're, I mean, what are you doing over here? This is machlokas, another machlokas rishonim. Is this a reference only to the hotzas hadeshen, which is the way most learn? Or is it even a reference to the Truma Sadeshan, which is the way Rashi learns? Okay. In any event, Rebbe Eliezer said that Balei Mumin are kosher for the Hotza'at Hadeshan. It's a machlokes whether Rebbe Eliezer holds the same thing about Truma Sadeshan. So Reish Lakish says that these two psukim are interrelated in the fact that the same way we have a machlokas between Rabbi Eliezer and the Tanakama about whether Hotzas Hadeshin is kosher bebalei mumin. We have the same machlokas about Haramat Hadeshin. It's exactly the same thing. He holds that none of this is considered to be an Aveda, and that would be true according to Reish Lakish, even when it comes to Trumas Hadeshin. And the Tanakama, of course, would argue. So even though the mocker is the pasuk of begadim acherim, and that is acherim veherim, the way that he's learning, but he also would agree, perhaps, to the idea, not acherim. Remember, the pasuk meaning is, he did the Trumas Hadeshin, now comes the acherim. Acherim in comparison to the Trumas Hadeshin. Not true. The way Reish Lakish understands it, is that even though he's using the Lashon of Acherim to be not a Kohen that's kosher, it does not mean as the Kohen would have to be if he was doing Trumas Hadeshin. When it says Acherim, it's referring to the overall state of Avodah and not to the previous Pasuk of doing a Trumas Hadeshin. Adarab, the Trumas Hadeshin is the same as Otsas Hadeshin according to Reish Lakish. Very much not our intuitive way of reading the Psukim and reading the Gemara. So my time in Reish Lakish. So why does Reish Lakish say that? I mean, it's certainly not the way that we would intuitively see it. Amar Lecha, Rish Lakish would say to you, how could you believe that the Trumas HaDeshen is an Aveda if all you need to do the Aveda is to be wearing two Begadim? It doesn't make any sense. It says, Michnas Sebad Yobash HaBesorov, thank you very much, Umido Bad. What about the Avnet? What about the Mitznefes? Is there such a thing as doing Avoda with two Begadim? And Rabbi Yochanan, who holds that, of course, you're bechuyif to wear your big day kuhuna. How does he explain the fact that the Torah only mentions two begadim? No, he says the Torah is mentioning two out of four. Look, you're bright enough to know that there are four begadim. So if I tell you he has to wear the ksenas mechnasayim, then you understand that, of course, he's also going to have to wear the mitznefes and the avnet. Well, that's sort of weird, Rabbi Yochanan. Because, I mean, it could have just said the Kohen, and we darshan all over. Wherever it says HaKohen, it means HaKohen Bekuhunato, which means that the Kohen has to be wearing Begadim, because otherwise he doesn't have the Din of Azar. So why does it have to mention these two? Ah, there's a reason. Because Mashna Hani, from the Lashon of Midobad, instead of simply saying Ketonet, Ketonet Bat Kodesh Yobash, what, all of a sudden, why is it called a Mido? So we're learning the Mido to mean that it should be kemidato, and that teaches us that if the big day kuhuna, the ketonet, is not made to the correct size for this kohen, that it comes down, all the way down, to cover up to the floor, and it's either too long or it's too short, that is not a kosher ketonet. So midobat teaches me that the definition of a ketonet is that it is kemidato. It has to be tailored correctly. And why does it say Michnas Eibad? Michnas Eibad is to tell me that the first thing that should be put on of the Big Day Kuhuna is always the Michnasayim. So Minayin Shelo Yehi Davar Kodem LeMichnasayim Shnemer Michnas Eibad Yilbash Al Besaro. Because you would think, okay, put on the Ketonet, and then it's you could slip off your whole underpants and put on your Michnasayim, which would be Tzanua. To say I'm going to put on my Michnasayim first. Why would I put on the Michnasayim first? So, okay, comes along the pasuk to tell me, no, the Michnasayim comes first. Yay, that's important then. So Reish Lakish. How does Reish Lakish know these dinim? Says Reish Lakish, what's your problem? Of course I know the dinim. Look, I mean, the word mido still means midato, according to me. I'm pointing out that there's two completely different issues over here. There's why it is that we're only going to mention two. But then that comes to tell me that mido, The language of Mido as opposed to Kutanto teaches me Kemidato. That's Midafkin Rachmana Balashon Mido. That itself is enough in and of itself to teach me this halacha. So, but as far as Shaloyed Kaodem Davar Michnasayim, that I learned from the simple meaning. It says, Umichmasebad Yobash Al Bisaro. So, what does that mean? That he's got just his flesh on him, meaning he's wearing his birthday suit. And on that, he puts his Michnasayim. That, it says that in the pasuk. I mean, so for that, I don't need to be taught that you need to wear Michnasayim. Okay, so now, says the Gemara, it looks like this machlokas between Reish Lakish and Rabbi Yochanan is mamish a machlokas tanoim. And this is a machlokas tanoim that we had before about the question whether Big Day Kohen, Godol B'Yom HaKippurim, Akshem L'Kohen Hedyet. So name it tanoim. It says in the Pasuk, Yilbash al Bisoro. And it repeats the word Yilbash, because that's really strange. It could have just said, Vilavasha Kohen Mido Bad Umichnes Sebad. Why does it have to say Yilbash again? I mean, it could have said even the Al Bisoro. It could have said, Vilavasha Kohen Mido Bad Umichnes Sebad Al Bisoro. That's perfectly full of all of the data that we just were medayin. So to repeat the word Yilbash, what's that coming to tell me? Ah. That, says Rabbi Yehuda, is coming to tell me, Yilbash, the other unmentioned things. Namely, you still have to wear your mitznevis va'avnet, which is exactly what Rabbi Yochanan said. Beautiful. Whereas Rabbi Dosa disagrees. Remember, we had this before. And he says, Yilbash, that Yilbash is referring to the Lavash HaKohen on Yom HaKippurim. And it's coming to tell me that these same begadim that the Torah told us, v'hinichum sham, is nonetheless does not mean that these begadim can never be worn again. It means they can never be worn again by a Kohen Gadol. But even the Kohen Hedyot, who is also doing Yilbash al-Bisaro, which sounds like Yom Kippur, he could be wearing those begadim of the Kohen Edyet. So that teaches me that the Big Day Kohen Gadol on Yom Kippur are kosher to wear as the Arba begadim for the Kohen Edyet. To which, remember, Rebbe said, no, there's two reasons why that's off the wall. First of all, they're not the same begadim, for God's sake. The avnate of the Kohen Gadol on Yom Kippur is not the same as the avnate of the Kohen Edyet, because he was only wearing all Big Day Sheish, and therefore it would be different than the normal avnate that would be worn by the normal Kohen, which is made out of Kilayim. This was Rebbe Shita, Rimadike, before. And ask yourself also, Va'od, you honestly believe that the four begadim that were made to use Lifnai V'Lifnim on the highest Madrega of Aveda should be used for like something like this? For Trumas HaDeshan? I mean, begadim shenishtamash b'am kedusha chamura, so now tishtamesh b'am kedusha kala? Therefore, Yilbash can't come to mean what you're saying. Yilbash must come to mean l'rabot atashchakim. You can even use begadim that are worn out, as long as they're not torn, and as long as they're not dirty, as we'll see elsewhere.